can be more than your eye.
We have a common enemy. Dr. No has broken ranks with our organization. He must be eliminated. Eliminated.
I declare war on Goldfinger. War. 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 He could easily have been more than your eye.
Vengeance against Dr. No.
And reclaim what he took from you. The rewards will be great.
An eye for an eye.
Hello, friends and folks, and welcome back to On Her Majesty's Secret Playlist, our podcast where we are allowed to declassify some of the missions of MI6. I'm Six Detmar from Scanline Media.
I'm Jennifer Uncle from Scanline Media.
And Jen, do you know what the number 6 chart topper song was in 1944, which would be when Queen Elizabeth II, our current Queen of England, was 18 years old? I mean, you're being very sporting. There's no way it's 1944.
Yeah. The most I can think is like, is that the Charleston?
That might be. It is not the Charleston. This is a Ella Fitzgerald song, Into Each Life Some Rain Must Fall. That's a great song.
Oh, yeah. I've heard one or two Ella Fitzgerald songs.
Yeah, talented lady. So we'll drop that on for a bit here as we set up what we're doing on this episode.
Yeah.
Into each life some rain must fall, but too much is falling in mine.
So we decided we're covering a game again. of course, a game as in a interactive depiction of a historical event, you know.
Deep from the files of MI6.
Indeed. They really didn't want people to know about this one because it's a report from an alternate dimension. We're not going to get very many of those. In fact, I don't think we'll get any others.
This is
debatable.
Yeah, this is GoldenEye Rogue Agent, which basically asks the question, what if we treated Bond villains like Disney villains?
It also asks the question, like, what if we dropped, like, you know, just a classic, like, PS2, like, anti-hero in the middle of one of these games. What if you were playing as Kratos or the dude from Prototype? I know that's PS3, but it still fits the spirit. And also, this is one where you break the timeline, because the events of this game, like, ordinarily the way it goes is that the events of a Bond game could have theoretically happened between movies or whatever. It would have been fine, right? This is impossible to square with the rest of the James Bond chronology.
Yeah, basically just a bunch of villains throughout the decades this series has been going are all, like, at odds with one another and are all alive together, so...
And then are all dead together.
Yeah, exactly.
yeah, so, GoldenEye Rogue Agent, released in 2004, November of 2004, and this... I don't think it's like late, but it's a decently late era, like PS2 Xbox generation game, right?
2004. Like
it's well into lifespan. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Well into lifespan. So, I think I had very fond memories of this game. And I managed to put up, you know, I mentioned we were doing this and talked with you and friend of the pod, Abnormal Mappings Jackson. And was like, this game's great. And you two were like, yeah? and I was like, fuck you. You all see. We're going to play this game and it's going to be sick as hell. And we played this game and I'm like, so listen, about it being sick, right? When I said sick as hell, I might have meant it has a disease. But there are things to like about this game. So just quickly setting up our premise here. You are playing as a 00 agent whose number we don't know. We just know his name is Mr. Hunter. That's from the Xbox manual. He is being discharged from MI6. He in the past had a mission that put him in conflict with Julian, who shot him and took out his eye. And he took that very, very personally, and it started to affect his work. And this all comes to a head. He has a training mission alongside 007. They're put into a simulation of basically the end of Goldfinger. A bit dramatized with a lot more people with guns and stuff, but which is funny because it already has a lot of people with guns. That's one of the more gun happy endings of a Bond movie.
They send the entire US military in there.
Yeah. So you do that and you like your helicopter crashes and Bond's dangling. You don't even help him because you don't even care. You're just focused on, you're just so brutal and vicious. And then you don't even get the job done. And then the nuke that Goldfinger places goes off. And so then you're kicked out of the simulation and M is like, you fucking suck at this. Take a hike. But turns out GoldenEye Free Agent becomes GoldenEye Rogue Agent as you sign up with Orc Goldfinger in his quest to... there's a rivalry going on between him and Dr. No. And by rivalry, I mean they're both trying to big-time murder the other. You are Goldfinger's, man on the ground, man on the street. Take care of business.
Yep. You're even fitted with a golden eye, from...
So funny.
Given to you by Francisco Scaramanga, who has gone from being an assassin to a scientist in this one, and which is really funny because we'll be talking about the movie that he's from, and that the big confrontation in that movie is Bond explaining how things work to him and being like, well, I don't know how that works, but yeah, sure.
It's very funny. A lot of this is just a lack of, like, the most surface level reading of every Bond thing, right? Like, this guy has a golden eye because they were talking about it. They're like, so this is like we're trying to tie this into GoldenEye because GoldenEye 64, of course, beloved game, very popular, and tying into it can only help our sales, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then someone on the team was like, wait, what was the GoldenEye? And they're like, I'm sorry? Like, in GoldenEye, what was the GoldenEye? And there's quiet for a minute, and then someone from the back of the room says, it was a satellite. And they're like, that sucks. Give our guy a literal golden eye.
Yeah.
And to be honest, I think it's very stupid, but in the spirit of stupidity is one of the best things about the game. It's just the fact that they give this guy a dumb cybernetic golden eye that, like, controls magnets. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, it's really something. Especially, like, they give them silly names, too. For example, X-ray vision is called MRI. Like, you're performing a medical procedure.
And, of course, it doesn't really work like MRI. I mean, none of this works like how the tech they're referencing works, of course. But it's like, when it gets to the point, like, like Christopher Lee, because they really did get most of the real actors for this, which is pretty fucking great. So you get, like, Christopher Lee going, I've upgraded you with a magnetic induction field. It's basically telekinesis. Did you play fucking PsyOps? And you're like, okay, I guess I can psychically throw people around the room, but not psychically, it's magnets. And then that power isn't even very good, but it just takes so much damn meter. But yeah, over the course of this game, you do your Fort Knox simulation, then a lot of this war between Goldfinger and Dr. No is over the Omen device, which is a magic machine that makes people turn into dust, basically.
Yeah.
That Oryk has had his scientist create. And Dr. No's like, I want that. Also, fuck you, Auric.
The entire game is basically chasing after the Omen or trying to protect the Omen.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, I will give them props for instrumentalizing this in the last level of the game by producing the weapon, the Omen XR, which is a, like, a sci-fi gun that, like, miniaturizes Omen technology to shoot slow-moving projectiles that evaporate into when they touch, right? Like, at least they'd found a way to bring that technology and make it relevant to the actual playing of the game to sort of enforce it being a, I don't know. That feels like a smart move, even though I think that gun fucking sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Though it looks cool as shit, the fact that the way it works is it's like, it has like these like blue LED attachable and detachable barrels, and that's how you reload it, is a pretty cool animation.
Yeah. It's also worth mentioning that, like, Goldeneye himself is... It's weird because he's clearly a nothing character, just someone to be like, okay, here's the player. They render just enough of him in cutscenes where it's like, okay, you... I feel like he should be in fewer of the cutscenes or not be as visually present because I feel like it goes against what they're trying to do with him.
I mean, I don't think he's supposed to be a blank slate. I think he's a shooter protagonist, and so they made him silent, and I don't know... Like, it would be weird to have him quipping all the time, but I don't know how well the choice to make him completely silent serves them. But he's not without a personality, right? Like, you do have that moment where Bond is dangling and you have no option of any sort to help him, right? In fact, one of the things that, like, there are bits that I'm like, someone, like, clever had their hand in this, right? When you are when you first start the game and you're in that helicopter flying to the thing, right? There is a MI6 agent, right? Probably just a regular soldier in the helicopter with you. And if you move your cursor over him, it does the green cross of like, nope, he's on your side, right? And if you move over Bond, it fucking doesn't. Goldeneye hates Bond.
Oh, amazing. I did not notice that.
Uh-huh, and there are other little things like that, right? Like, there's a mission where you go to a place called the Octopus, which is very stupid, but basically it's like an evil auction house for villain stuff. And while you're there, you're like, the AI running the installment is like, you're a representative of Goldfinger, so basically anything you go goes on Goldfinger's card, and you just start buying shit. And Goldfinger starts getting mad, like, please stop wasting my fucking money, you prick. I mean, it's not a lot, it is the little things, but I do think he's not a complete blank slate. There are attempts to make him something of a character.
It was interesting how you more or less buy the weapons and the vehicle that you're going to escape with, too.
Well, the weapons you don't even use till the next mission. That's why Auric's so pissy.
No, there's the bit where you're escaping within the vehicle, and in order to get out when you're surrounded by these people, you, like, fire a bunch of it at once.
Yeah, I think that's all built into the craft, because you separately bought a bunch of, like, C4 or whatever, but that's fair, you did buy the ship on site. Because he's so quiet, I really think Goldeneye is a bit of a cipher. It's like, God, what's that guy thinking? I just want to get in that head, understand his motivations and intentions. And if we'd gotten the sequel they intended to make, then maybe we would have. But
the cliffhanger is so weird because, like, they are acting like things are different than Spectre, but then they just straight up have Blofeld at the end, like, number one, as Scaramanga is reporting into him. And it's like, okay, I do not understand how any of this is structured whatsoever, other than Goldfinger having Auric Enterprises and then Dr. No having whatever the fuck his group is called.
I guess the assumption I made was that it was like Auric's stuff and Dr. No's stuff are like, they're both technically part of Spectre, but they're big enough to have a lot of autonomy. Mm-hmm. Blofeld, aka number one, is like, you know, be great as if these shitheads didn't have autonomy, they're morons. And so he sort of sets them upon each other subtly and watches the results play out. But gosh, we really thought that Goldfinger would be our perfect cat's paw, but maybe he's become too powerful. It's very silly. It is clear they wanted a sequel, but I also think it works just fine. And like, there is a tone of this sort of thing, right? Like, this era, I feel like it's specifically games, but it's not always just games, of like, it is so blatantly playing for a sequel without specifically saying what the sequel is, that it feels like an ending to me. I've seen it so many times that I'm just like, sure, this is the classic, like, hey, sure, we don't have any ideas, but we'd love it if you gave us money to do this again, that I accept as a real ending at this point.
Yeah, it's... We should mention that this game has... Well, are you familiar with the developer who made this 6?
I'm not, no.
Okay, so at the time they were called EA Los Angeles, but they're also known as DreamWorks Interactive. Specifically, this is the same team that made Medal of Honor, like the original Medal of Honor. And... yeah, they went from that to the various sequels to Clive Barker's Undying, and between Medal of Honors, they made this game.
That's bizarre.
Yeah.
They made some fairly respected games. Obviously, the first Medal of Honor, I think, wasn't that good, but was, like, important, right? But, like, a Medal of Honor Frontline for a PS2 shooter was very well regarded. No, sorry, it was PC. I'm getting mixed up. Was very well regarded at the time it came out. Battle for Middle Earth was a surprisingly good, like, Lord of the Rings game. And then they did Command & Conquer Red Alert 3, which is pretty well regarded, right? Like, they have some... They made Boom Blocks. I mean, hey, how much bigger do you get than Boom Blocks? A lot of games that I feel like at their time were pretty well regarded, but a lot have sort of faded into memory. Like you saying Clive Barker's Undying. It was like, oh shit, right.
Yeah, that game is wild. It's that whole situation. Like it's a genuinely scary first person shooter. Like it knows how to get you sometimes, but yeah, what a weird history. And then sadly, like many EA studios, they had like a few stinkers, 3 stinkers in a row even, and then I was like, okay, that's enough of out of you.
Yeah. That's how it goes sometimes. Especially when your stinkers are made because they're bad ideas that you're forced to make by, you know, corporate leadership.
Yeah. Medal of Honor Warfighter was such a bad idea that from what I remember, it's the game that stopped the practice of like licensing specific guns for EA shooters. I feel like that's the one where that happened, because at some point they got bad enough press for like teaming up with various weapons manufacturers to be like, hey, here's this licensed gun, that at some point these companies started going, we should probably stop doing this.
Yeah, that makes sense. It was a lot of bad. At the time, I was one of the, I think you and I both were at the time people being like, yo, what the fuck? And for good reason. That's a fucked up thing to do.
Yep.
But overall, okay, so Rogue Agent, playing it, talk to me. What do you thought? We sort of laid out some basic framework, but like what did you make of this game?
So my initial impressions were that I fucking hated it. But, like, I realized that at least some of that was down to the fact that I've been using a specific set of cables to get my PS2 running on my TV, and there's some delay there. So I had to switch to alternate methods, and those worked a little bit better. But, like, it's a game that I only started having fun with in either case when I just switched it to easy and turned on the auto-aim, which is not really the way I like to play first-person shooters. I like some real challenge, but this one really didn't... It really wasn't satisfying when I tried to actually challenge myself. Like, there's something about the way that it handles dual wielding, or just weapon wielding in general, that kind of irked me. Like, the way that you're constantly only getting, like, 2 to 3 clips for your weapon, and they kind of make you switch things out a little too often. And
I think they're going for like the Halo. They're going for the Halo thing of like you're constantly having to switch weapons based on like field conditions. But weapons don't feel different enough, and there aren't enough of them for that to actually succeed.
Yeah, and like if you happen to pick up a weapon that requires two hands at once, suddenly you can't throw grenades anymore.
you can only throw grenades when you're using a one-handed weapon with one hand. Dual wielding, of course, can't throw grenades either.
Yeah.
So you end up not using grenades very much.
Yeah, which feels silly. And it also just, like, I feel like this game ran out of steam hard, like, once you get around the point where you're at the Hoover Dam. Because, like, at that point they just start doing things like, alright, so what if we take this level? What if we put every single tank we can fit on this fucking bridge and just have them constantly firing at you? Like, it's a very maximalist design to these sorts of shooters from this specific era that just makes it a slog to play for me, more or less. Like, it feels like it's pulling out all the stops to drag things down just to be like, okay, here's what challenge is, when it's not making it challenging in an interesting way. It's just making it more of a pain in the ass to deal with.
Yeah, I think that's definitely inaccurate. I mean, here's the thing, though, right? This is a PS2 era shooter. And honest, I mean, like the best ones played pretty well, right? And were fun to challenge yourself. But I think most PS2 shooters, I would say, are games that when they get hard, it's not for fun reasons, and you kind of just want to cruise through them. I would say that about the Time Splitters games. I don't think the single player in those, I don't think they got very fun by the end unless you were just fucking around. It is a transitionary era where we are starting to figure out what makes the first person genre tick and sort of agree on like best practices, right? But they're not fully implemented, and so it leads to some things that are on some games that are on real weird boundary lines. Like, this game is clearly heavily drawing from Halo, but then like doesn't do some very fundamental Halo things, including this game doesn't have a jump button, which is very strange. It would break most of the levels.
Yeah, doesn't have a jump button, and just the way that you interact with everything feels a little stilted to me. Like, they try and put some English on it by being like, okay, since you're basically an anti-hero, we're going to give you points for killing in impressive ways. So you get little badges when you get off headshots, or you use someone as a body shield, or you explode a bunch of people at once, but
or you use the environmental traps like electrified catwalks and sending a automated gold train. I didn't really understand that one.
And it's funny too, because it feels like by the first few levels after those, it kind of forgets about the traps for the most part. Like, there's bits where I think in the China level where you can like change, you can basically use your eye to hack into the barriers and move them around, but that doesn't really act as a trap so much as it is just you adjusting your cover.
Mm-hmm. They come back a little bit when you get close to Dr. No's place, because then it's like, oh, there are all these like catwalks you can suddenly open up beneath people, and it becomes a little more useful again. But or turrets you can hack with your eyes, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have eye powers, which we mentioned the eye powers. The eye powers are kind of busted in that like they don't give you enough resource to use them. For most of the powers, I would say the shield, they're reasonably generous with how much shield you can use, though it recharges very slowly. But like the magnetic telekinesis, you use once and it uses 75% of your bar, and it's like, okay, I can't use it again for 5 minutes. The MRI vision sucks. And then the hacking is like only useful at certain times, though apparently we figured out after the fact there are enemies that start getting introduced about at the midway point who have like the same shield you do. Apparently you can hack them and turn it off. Wish I'd known that. That would have been real helpful.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I think you're right about this game. Like, it sort of forgets about the traps. It forgets to set up fun scenarios for, like, its powers. Like, there's a part where early on in the game, you're doing a mission and you end up, like, you have to go protect the Omen device. And you're in this room and the enemies are running around the outside with tiny little windows. And that might be my least favorite part of the game. Because it's like, here, use your MRI vision to see them through the wall and shoot them through the wall. And it's like, well, okay, inside this room that I cannot leave, there are no guns that can shoot through the wall. So unless I brought one in with me, I can't do that. Also, even if I try to do that, when you're shooting through walls, it doesn't use any auto-aim.
Yeah, you're kind of just so, blind-firing in these windows whenever you see them pop up.
Exactly. It's just like whack-a-mole with like the moles like sprinting past a window real quick. And because we were playing on easy with auto aim, like I don't want to play this game legit. I think it feels a little sluggish in ways that are mostly like sort of like ironed over, like you know, covered up by auto aim. But when the auto aim acts up, you suddenly are just like, wow, this feels like shit. Like, this person is standing behind cover, and they're standing up, so it only covers their, like, their lower half. But that's enough to disable auto aim, and I just can't fucking hit them anymore.
Hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I, you know, this game could have used a few more passes of tuning, but it's a fucking licensed game from this era. There was no way that was going to happen.
Yeah, it's one of those games where it all feels a little bit wonky because around the time of the 360 is when they started, like, I'd say Xbox 360 games found a really good sweet spot, at least the best shooters did, where it was still a time where you could get really weird with what you were doing, but it felt like the controls felt standardized enough that you didn't run the risk of just picking something up and hating what you were playing.
Yeah, I think you're right. Maybe we'll get to play some of those at some point for this podcast. The other thing that's interesting, we mentioned it briefly, but this game is like chock full of, you know, James Bond characters, right? Like most, pretty much the villains. And their use is varied and strange. We've already mentioned how Scaramanga, who we watched Man with a Golden Gun, and we're going to talk about that in a minute. He spends a lot of this game explaining how things work when his whole denouement in the other movie is explaining how he doesn't know how anything works. That's confusing. Oddjob literally, like, you see Oddjob from off screen, you just see a hat fly in the simulation. And then otherwise, I think he's like teased in a some scene or two. And then at the end of the dam level, he just runs at you and tries to punch you when he's on your side. And so you just throw him off a catwalk and he dies. And you're like, what was your motivation? What was anything?
It's especially weird because like in the earlier episodes, they often referred to you as Oddjob or Oddjob's man. So like, it was a situation where it seemed like the two of you were kind of a team, except the definition of team here is just that you get shit done and then at some point he betrays you.
I mean, you know, he doesn't speak, you know, like historically that's a thing about his character. So I guess he can't be like, this is for Dr. No, who I'm really working for. But it's like, why did any of that happen?
Yeah, it's interesting because apparently EA really wanted to basically recast all of these classic characters with modern Hollywood actors, like Jessica Biel. They went as far as casting Jessica Biel to play Pussy Galore, but at some point during development, they decided that wouldn't work, so they just hired voice-alikes where they could, and then also got Judi Dench and Christopher Lee, essentially.
Oh, they did a pretty convincing sound-alike for Goldfinger. I thought that was the real guy.
Yeah, they did a pretty good job with that.
But yeah, like, there are a lot of these that are weird. Like, Xenia Onatopp shows up because she's the femme fatale from GoldenEye, and honestly, in that movie, she was weak as shit, And she's even weaker here, where she's just... Go ahead.
It's funny because, like, they get to the bit where suddenly they seem like they're alluding to the way she killed people in that movie, because suddenly she's, like, strangling you while her hands are visible, so it seems like she's doing that same thing with her legs, but at some point she just decides, no, let's have a gunfight instead, and walks away.
And then loses the gunfight, of course, and it's just like, okay.
Yeah, I guess they felt like they had to have Onatopp here because it was like, okay, we're calling it GoldenEye. We have to have an element from fucking GoldenEye in this game.
Yeah, I really, I think the one that I'm just really frustrated by is I don't like the use of Pussy Galore. I understand you're working with Goldfinger, and so I guess it makes sense, but like, she's a character who, in her own film, is really misused and abused. And just because of that, I'm not happy to see her again, because it feels like, no, all of that was great. I mean, like, it, the game ends with her being like, yeah, good job, let's have sex. And, like, the whole thing was she was a lesbian and Bond, like, assaults her to try and get her to change her mind. It fucking sucks. Don't remind me of that.
Yeah, here it just seemed like they included her just so you could have a character who was close to you and on your side still when the big betrayal happened or whatever.
Yeah, that's fair. I don't know. I wish it wasn't here.
This game was also written by Bilson and Paul DeMeo, the same two who worked on Nightfire and, well, the past three James Bond games, even. Like, they were just the writers for most of EA's PS2 era James Bond games.
Well, let's take it to some other writing. Let's take a quick little break here in the middle and talk about The Man with the Golden Gun.
Yeah, our initial plan when we were doing this stuff was that, okay, if there's ever a game that ties in directly to a movie, we should watch the movie, but, like, as it turns out, there's fewer of those than you might think, so it was a situation where it's like, okay, Christopher Lee's in this game, Christopher Lee's in that movie, so obviously we should watch the movie that his character came from.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they're, like... They're also gonna be, it goes both ways, right? There are gonna be lots of games that aren't tied to movies, but also that means there are gonna be a lot of movies we wouldn't otherwise see. And so, like, why not just have some fun with it? I will start out by saying I think Christopher Lee is my favorite part of this movie.
Yeah, he's the best part of it, and also he's not in it for that much. Like, he occasionally makes appearances here and there, but for the most part, like, they're trying to find Scaramanga so that they can, like, take care of him before he kills them, before he kills Bond first. And, it's more or less a trip all over the world while they're doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it, you do get this really interesting scene at the beginning where basically Scaramanga seems to have a arrangement, with his servant, where basically the servant gives guests a certain amount of money. It's like, okay, you'll get the rest if you find a way to kill Scaramanga. And everyone is kind of directed into this funhouse where a shootout happens. Which, by the way, that funhouse level is in the video game, just in the multiplayer section. And yeah, since Scaramanga is able to kill people in one shot, he's usually, well, he's always winning and getting the money back out of it, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, the thing of, like, the titular golden gun, right, is a pretty cool invention of the movie, because in the book it worked differently. But in this, it's like he's got a cigarette lighter, a cigarette case, and, like, a fountain pen that click together to form this, like, pretty cool-looking gun. And it's just this, like, clunky zip pistol that he is shown to never miss with, which I think is, like, it's fun that they don't have him lose by subverting that. They're like, no, that part of him never gets taken away from him. He's just the fucking best. Except for his personality, which is the fucking worst.
Yeah, it's like an incentive to never miss, because each bullet costs $1 million, and he can really only fire once before having to, like, reload, or... It seems like you have to load it with the bullet already in some capacity, but... yeah, it's a situation where... I kind of like that, because there's various moments where he's just playing around with that stuff, and because no one else has ever seen the golden gun and lived, they're not aware that he's just assembling the gun and is preparing to shoot them.
Yeah. I do think the bullets don't literally cost $1 million. He charges $1 million for a hit, and on any hit, he only fires once. So, like, sort of, like, metaphorically, it costs $1 million or whatever. Given that he buys them in packs of, like, six from a dude who's living in a basement, I bet that pack doesn't cost $6 million.
Yeah. At the same time, though, that guy in the basement seemed like he was pretty well set up in terms of, like, you have
sure,
to...
Sure, he knew it was up. He was getting paid okay.
Yeah. Like, that crazy rifle that, like, only works because it's built for a person that is missing a few fingers in their hand.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a good, like, a good interrogation sequence where it's for a person who's missing two fingers on their shooting hand. And so, like, first of all, the sights are aligned differently, so it'll hit lower because you'll hold it differently. But also, you don't pull a trigger. There is no trigger. You sort of push your shoulder into the butt of the stock and it fires. And then Bond uses this to interrogate the gun maker about Scaramanga. And he's even like, well, I guess I can fire to scare him, because if he's right, it's going to miss. So whatever.
Yeah, like, he misses, and then he's like, oh, yeah, you're right. It is arranged an inch too low, and then corrects it. How do you feel about Roger Moore, by the way? Like, I'm not familiar with how many Bond movies you've watched, so I don't know whether you had a impression of him already.
I haven't actually seen very many Roger Moore Bond movies. I've seen this one before, and what I was reminded of, I mentioned to you I'd seen it recently, and you were like, And what I was reminded of is, like, oh, right, the way I saw it recently was my dad was watching it, and I walked through the room several times, and so I missed a lot, which explains why I remembered this being a good movie.
Yeah, like...
But, yeah, just on Moore real quick. I think he plays Bond very differently, but I think he plays him in a way I enjoy. Hmm. I think he plays him as, like, affably walking the line between competence and incompetence, I find very fairly charming, so...
Yeah, I think he's kind of all right in the role. My bigger issue is just that, like... It's a Roger Moore movie being directed by Guy Hamilton, the same guy who did Goldfinger. So Bond more or less has the same super violent attitude towards women as he does in that movie. Like,
yeah,
the bit where he basically catches the woman who's basically acting as the go-between for the bullets and just talks about how he's gonna break her arms and shit like that, and it gets uncomfortable.
It is uncomfortable, but I also think there is something good about it. Like, it's gross, but I think the way in which he so quickly switches from, like, about to break this lady's arm to, like, his playful cattiness really does a good job of emphasizing, like, this guy fucking sucks a lot. Like, listen, part of him being, like, a super spy is him just being a complete goddamn monster that he's like, no, I can break someone's arm and then offer them champagne. That's fine. Like, no, dude, it's fucking not.
Yeah. The bigger issue is that this is maybe the third most racist James Bond movie.
It's so intensely racist. It's incredible. And I mean, you know, listen, I don't know if anything is ever going to top You Only Live Twice, right? That one's a fucking standard bearer for Bond racism. But good lord.
Yeah, like, for context, You Only Live Twice is the one where Sean Connery is in yellowface, from my recollection. So
Yes.
Yeah. That's why I consider this one the third most racist, because the second most racist was the one that came out immediately before this, Live and Let Die, and that has some things.
I don't know if I've seen Live and Let Die. I probably haven't.
That's the one about the voodoo murder, Baron Samedi.
No, I have not seen that.
Yeah, it's rough.
But yeah, this one just has a lot of, like, you know, anti-Asian racism, and also a lot of misogyny, of course, right? Bond tradition to be completely toxic to women. But, like, they even have a character who I'm told is from Live and Let Die that's recurring. Mm-hmm. Obviously, I haven't seen it. Who's, like, Sheriff J.W. Pepper, who is a Louisiana sheriff, who's now on vacation in wherever Bond is, several different places in Asia. You know, I think he's in Hong Kong at one point, and then he's in Thailand.
Yeah, they want you to notice the Live and Let Die connection, too, because when he sees Bond for the first time, they play a bit of that Paul McCartney theme through the backing music.
Okay. Is that what that was? Mm-hmm. But he is just, like, there to just spew some of the most foul racism you've heard in a movie in a long time. It's really foul. Like, this movie is 2 hours long, and I would genuinely say I think half an hour of it is racism. It's so wild. What the fuck?
Yeah. The one fun bit that they have when he's present is the bit where, like, they're in a car chase and Bond suddenly realizes that he's on the opposite end of the river that Scaramanga's driving at. And while still driving forward, he notices a bridge that he passes that's out. So he backs up and is like, okay, he's gonna try and jump it. And he does a fake Southern accent, basically being like, I sure am, when he does this Dukes of Hazzard style corkscrew leap off this bridge.
And even that's like, it's fun adjacent. It's not actually fun. You're just so relieved that this character is in a beat that is intended to be interesting and is not intensely racist.
And they even ruined the trick by using a slide whistle when it's going around.
I think the slide whistle rules.
Like, whoop!
It's very, very stupid. Yeah, I mean, also, so the two, like, female actors we have here who have any kind of role, we have Andrea Anders, who's, you know, Scaramanga's lover, and is just like, just, I would say, the classic Bond character of, like, just trapped between two abusers nonstop, and you're just like, wow, your life is fucking hell. All right, great. And then you have Mary Goodnight, who I don't understand why they did this.
Yeah.
She's an MI6 agent whose role is to be a moron.
Yeah, like, she ends up getting the secret solar plexus item that basically is going to
solar plexus is a part of your body, sweetie.
What did they call it?
It's the Solex.
Solex, yes. The Solex, which is going to solve the energy crisis. Even back in 1974, they were making movies about, like, well, oil's a bad thing to rely on, so why don't we...
Ba-ba-ba-dum-bwah!
But yeah, like, she's given this and told, okay, you need to, like, you need to go ahead and put this somewhere safe and just stay out of trouble. And instead, like, she goes poking around the villain's car and gets thrown in the trunk. And then, she's mostly there she's mostly there for that scene near the end where she's accidentally touching all the buttons with her ass. And
there's that. There's, like, a scene where it's, like, Bond's about to sleep with her, and then the other lady comes in. It's like, oh no, I gotta shove you in the closet. And you even are like, hey, what about that closet? That closet looks more comfortable. And Bond's like, shut up, and shoves her in the bad closet. And it's like, hey, sit there and listen while I fuck this lady. It's like, I don't know who thought we needed this in this movie.
Yeah. God. Oh well. Yeah.
But then you do get to Scaramanga's island, and Scaramanga there is just like, Christopher Lee is doing such a good job of this guy that's just having a fucking great time, right? Like, he's just like, Bond shows up and Nick Knack, who we will talk about, But Nick Knack walks up offering champagne, his you know, sort of servant, and Scaramanga from like the shadows shoots the cork off the champagne. And it's just like, ah, sorry, I couldn't resist. He's just having such a fun time, like in character, that I think it's really charismatic of like a look behind this guy who's the world's greatest assassin and how he is in ways still just an overgrown child.
Yeah, and like, Christopher Lee, he knows how to just really nail any part he's thrown. Like, very classical actor for all sorts of Z-grade horror films and all sorts of stuff. Like, he can more or less elevate any material you give him. And I feel like that's why I remembered this movie being better than it was. Mostly just because, like, you just remember the end of it, because the end of it's cool. Just watching him hang around with Bond and more or less show off his island.
Yeah, him giving him the tour of the Solex, and it's like it's solar conversion system, and just getting negged the whole time by Bond.
Yeah, and eventually it gets to be too much because he just keeps doing it during lunch and. Scaramanga's finally, okay, fuck this. We're just gonna go ahead and duel now. We're making it happen.
I mean, he starts to break, and then Bond's like, yeah, okay, I'll duel you. And he's like, okay, great, listen, thank you. You apologized. I'll take it. Because he's just portrayed as such, like, a single-minded guy. Yeah, and then the duel is pretty fun. I do think, you know, the fun house is a little bit silly, but, like, one thing I do like is they set up early that he has, like a wax figure of Bond in his fun house, and the way Bond finally gets the kill is he imitates the wax figure. And I like that because in shots before, like, during that sequence, before, you know, the reveal is made, it is actually Roger Moore in the place of that statue. And you can tell because, like a normal human, he can't hold perfectly still. And I think that's really charming, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, this movie does a few bits where statues get replaced with real people. And it,
God, it's, the other one is so bad.
Yeah. Which is probably where we get into Nick Knack a bit.
Yeah, so the character of Nick Knack in this movie is played by the late Hervé Villechaize. It is an unusual name for me, and so I'm probably fucking it up. I apologize. But he is a deceased French-American little person actor. Who like has a heck of a history of just like had a fucking hard life, right? And his role in this movie, people who knew him said it was like the his happiest part of his life because it was like a role he had a lot of fun with and he was getting paid really well. And that sucks because it's still a role that is making fun of him, right?
Mm-hmm.
Which I guess, you know, in the 70s, using a little person actor, what are you expecting? But it's still, it sucks. There are times when he gets to have fun. There are bits where he's like, he has lured someone into the funhouse and he's just, you know, switching the cameras and just giggling as they fuck up. And it's like, yeah, have fun. Good for you. But ultimately, like, he has to sacrifice himself for Scaramanga, and they do, you know, jokes at his expense because of his, you know, of his condition, and it's just a bummer. I wish they didn't.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a shame.
But, yeah, I mean, overall, if you took out, like, I really think taking out all the racism would do two things. One, it would make this 2-hour Bond movie shorter, which would be great. And also then the racism wouldn't be there, and I'd be way more able to be like, sure, this movie's all right.
Yeah. It's a shame, because, like, the one really cool bit where they're just kind of killing time, more or less, is when Bond gets taken to a capsized boat in Hong Kong, and he goes in there, and it's like this weird funhouse situation where the boat's still overturned and everything, but like an entire British base has been set up inside it. Like it.
that part's so cool. That like the part where the whoever the actor is, like the minor actor they have playing like the British like military guy who shows him in, when he's like, listen, you got the Chinese on one side, you got the Americans on the other. This is the only place in fucking Hong Kong where your conversations won't be bugged. And it's like, he plays it really well in this sort of like light, but like, you know, sort of like, you know, gallows humor in a way that's really fun. I don't know. There's something about that whole scene that I really enjoy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's the most visually interesting part of the movie too, I'd say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I also really enjoy, one thing I will say for Roger Moore is he does a great job of playing Bond as like confused and a dope at times, where he goes in that boat and he's just like, the fuck is, and then he sees M and he's just like, what? Like, you fucking idiot. God bless.
It's especially funny because, like, he thinks he's being taken out here to be killed. So he sees them pass by the boat and throws a life preserver on someone and jumps onto the boat. And then it just turns out, oh yeah, this is where they were taking you the entire time.
Yeah. Yeah, the good things about this movie, and if you really want to see a fun performance from Christopher Lee, as we say, he's not in the movie as much as you'd like, but, you know, I it's not like this movie is, like, inexcusable to watch or anything, but probably you're better off watching something else.
Yeah, for sure.
But you can't possibly be better off playing anything else other than GoldenEye Rogue Agent as we duck back to our main topic.
Yeah, I'm looking at the... Did you want to get into the weapons now? Or
sure. Else? We're gonna try and do a ranking of something on every episode. And on this one, it's going to be the guns. Because I guess maybe we'll just do like top three and bottom three. Because there are not a ton of guns, but there are enough that it would be annoying to go through all of them. And I wanted to do... I was originally thinking we'd do the powers, but it turns out the powers are pretty open and shut. That, like, some of them suck and some of them don't, right?
Yeah. You told me there was one that was, like, exclusive to multiplayer.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's, like, a variant of the magnetic induction field, but basically in the multiplayer there is one... that is, like, intended to counter other eye powers, where basically you make close-range, like, eye contact, like, you know, like, screen to screen, and it freezes the other person in place for a little while. And that one's really cool because it adds this element to the multiplayer of, like, sort of the rock, paper, scissors of the powers as well, which is fun.
Mm-hmm.
But that is doesn't appear in the single player. Though, look, imagine how cool that would be is if you had a power that you just hit a button and anyone who was looking at you when you used it was frozen in place. That'd be sick.
Yeah. Like, I'm surprised they didn't do, like, I feel like that sort of thing in single player would be neat just because it's doing the whole Medusa thing, more or less. I feel like that mm-hmm. would fit in well with, like, this, get this the Bond ver- the Bond ideas. Let me try and rephrase that.
Sure.
I think a Medusa-like freezing people power would fit in well with Bond's more out there gadgets, sometimes attached to interesting ideas.
Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, we didn't get a lot of in Man with a Golden Gun. There weren't a lot of fun gadgets in that. There were Scaramanga, if anything, had them.
Yeah, like, you get a bit of... You do the typical thing where you just walk through Q's laboratory. He's talking about stuff, but...
Actually, that is... Sorry, to back up real quick. That is maybe my favorite scene of the movie is... Q and like Q's like lab assistant like having like a very like intellectual debate about where the bullet came from while Bond is mystified and can't follow the conversation. That's really charming.
Yeah, that part's all right.
Do you know your top three and we'll do top three and then we'll alternate. Do you know your top three weapons?
Yeah, my. Number one would probably be the Harpoon RL, which is basically that it's the rocket launcher that you kind of pump every time you need to fire it.
Mm-hmm.
Number two would probably be the mag rail, because it's neat to just fire through a wall and take someone out that way. And number one's probably just the AR Commando, because it's a decent approximation of an assault rifle, and assault rifles are usually my go-to for any of these sorts of games. So, yeah, went well.
Fair enough. I really hated the Harpoon. I thought it had a cool visual design, but, like, combined with the auto-aim, it was really obnoxious to use, actually.
Yeah, this game really wasn't built for auto-aim.
It has, but it also wasn't built for manual aim.
It's one of those games where just you'll want to play it with auto aim turned on because just aiming with that controller, which is a shame because like these people made a lot of first person shooters, but this one just does not control at all. This one does not control well at all if you're.
And it also like just enemy wise asks too much of you in situations for standard controls, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, my top three are gonna be, my number one might be the mag rail with the quick caveat that I basically only ever used it when I was dual wielding it with the Venom, which is like a poison dart gun. So you would shoot the Venom, which is like a, you know, like heavy auto aim and like, you know, hit scan. And like, then the enemy's like dazed and then you fire the rail gun and they're fucking dead. That one, too, was really fun for me. But then beyond that, I would say the Jackal, which is the sort of the Desert Eagle. All the semi-automatic weapons are firing rate capped in a weird way. Like they have like not anywhere close to as fast as you can pull the trigger. But the Jackal felt decent to fire. And on a lot of enemies, it was a one hit kill. So, you know, just fucking take care of business. And then also, lastly, I also have the AR-4 Commando because it's just kind of an overtuned M4. With auto-aim, the way you can just like point it down range and tap the trigger and five people die, it was a little much, and I relied on that a lot.
Yeah. Mamba 12G was maybe my least favorite gun in the whole thing, just because...
No kidding.
It was just like... It's... Like, usually a shotgun is a highlight of a first-person shooter, because, like, they're powerful, they have a good kick to them, like, just amazing sound design. It's fun to wield shotguns. This one is just an incredibly awkward thing that, like, you have to reload almost immediately. The reloading takes a while, and even when you're shooting them point blank, there's a good chance they're just gonna pop back up. Like, they just get knocked on their ass and come back up, and that's
it,
like...
It just doesn't do fucking damage. It sucks.
Yeah, it's not what a shotgun is supposed to be.
No.
I guess I wasn't a huge fan of the Venom either. Like, I when I was firing at people, I just wanted to take them down as quickly as possible, and the Venom is more of a stunning weapon, so it's like an extra step to me when I could just be using something that will take them down in one or two shots. And
sure, if I didn't have a mag rail, I would hate using a Venom, so, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess... I'm trying to think of the one I guess I didn't really use the Omen XR that much. Like, it was a neat idea, but it's something that they introduced so late into it that it's kind of like, okay, it's whatever.
Yeah, I think my my list is reasonably similar. Definitely Mamba 12G, worst gun in the game. Fucking sucks. Next up, I would say Omen XR for me, because it's... I think it looks cool and I like the animation, but one... basically, two things. One, when it's introduced, it's a one-hit kill gun with really slow-moving projectiles, which means it's really hard to fucking hit these enemies with. And then also, when you have it, enemies also have it, and so sometimes you'll round a corner and walk into a blue blob and instantly die. And that fucking sucks. So that's really frustrating. And my third least favorite is actually the Harpoon rocket launcher, because anytime I saw one, it meant I was gonna have to do some fucking interminable vehicle fight that sucked.
Yeah, and there are moments where the auto-aim will get you killed because you're firing too close to a wall or another vehicle.
Or, like, if you try and use it on people, it's just, like, you can't lead the target because of the auto-aim, so.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't think the weapon is inherently bad, but context made me hate it. When I saw one, I was like, oh, fucking great, here we go. maybe I should have considered the Tesla EM, though. That thing is fucking useless.
Yeah, it's... I feel like I didn't really... this game didn't really encourage me to play around with its weapons as much as earlier Bond games have, so I wasn't really experimenting with many of them, and I almost never dual-wielded.
So, this game did not sell very well, and it did not review very well, right? And some of that's fair, but some of that I do a little bit object to. Like, one of the things that people knocked it for was they were like, this breaks the Bond timeline. And I think that's maybe the best thing about it, is that they're willing to do things that... Like, they're willing to go out on a limb on things. What they come up with is not great, right? But I absolutely want to encourage these games to be like, we don't have to, like, be slave to the plots of the movies, right?
Yeah. It's kind of a shame that they weren't able to do more with Bond, because apparently the writers initially had ideas of how to involve him further, but those ideas went against every single rule that the franchise has for Bond. So
sure.
The most they could do is just have him at the beginning and kill him off and be like, okay.
Though he's alive. It's just he got killed in a simulation, so.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah. The other thing that made this game hurt a lot is that it came out right after Everything or Nothing, which a lot of people view as, next to GoldenEye 007, maybe the best Bond game. Luckily, we're going to get to put that to the test on our next episode. Because we're doing Everything or Nothing.
Yeah, it's a game I've briefly touched before, but I've never spent a ton of time with, so I'm excited to give it a closer look.
Yeah, I played a demo that was on, like, a PlayStation Magazine demo disc, and I was like, this actually feels really fun. And then I never got it. Because at the time, I was not buying a lot of games, I was buying things that were cheap, you know.
Mm. Yeah, for sure.
That said, do you have anything else, or should we take it to questions?
I guess I will say, the more I played of it, the more I could see that, like, Like, there are things about it that are really neat. Like, I love the intense music. I love how the music just starts from 100 and never goes down. Like, even just the menu music is so wild. I think the visual treatment they give the credits at the beginning is kind of fun. There's clearly a lot of talent that worked on this. It's just a shame that it turned into kind of a middling to sometimes outright bad shooter.
Yeah, I mean, I think honestly, this is mostly what I'm looking for in this podcast, is games like this. Because, okay, like, let's say you take a good shooter from the era. Mm-hmm. For the most part, the things that made it good at this point will be outdated and not be that good anymore. Not exclusively, but a lot of the times, a lot of the, like, oh, the controls were really good, or, like, the gun handling was really good, just isn't going to be true comparatively anymore. And so I'm way more interested in Bond games that took weird risks and went out there on weird limbs. I don't know how much of a financial risk they thought it was to have, like, hardcore anti-hero protagonist, but in retrospect, it's so different than the rest of the franchise that I find that, you know, like, fun to look at. And that's a big part of why I'm fond of this game.
Yeah, and there's something novel about, again, like, taking the Bond villains and giving them the Disney treatment in terms of, like, what if we took a bunch of these villains and put them in the same room, gave them a chance to interact with one another? And I feel like if they had a little bit more of that, it'd be a situation where I'd be able to overlook the gameplay even more and just be like, yeah, this is a little niche classic or whatever. But as is, it's just something that has some really neat ideas that they sadly couldn't execute on. Like, they weren't able to make the big sequel they were planning with vehicles and an even longer story and stuff. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Sometimes that's just the way it goes. Like, the James Bond games in general have, like, a long history of ideas that they wanted to do that didn't turn out the way they would have liked. And at some point, they just stopped making Bond games altogether.
It's really funny because I think, like, for whatever reason, in my head, I was thinking about these games. Like, before I proposed this podcast, you were going to do, like, a series of, like, articles on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, and I was like, I mean, that's going to be miserable. None of those games, like, there are a couple of those games that are good, but mostly they're all pretty bad. And I don't think that's true. I think all of these games are, like, pretty much all of them are underbaked, right? All of them have elements that it's like, gosh, you really should have spent a little more time on this. But I don't think most of them are that bad, actually. This is one of the worst ones, and it's still really cool in its own ways.
Yeah, and having played 007 Racing, it can get much worse than this.
Oh, yeah, it can. All right, so we have a couple of questions. We put out the call really close to recording. I'm really grateful to everyone who sent something. We're going to try and put it out more in advance in the future. But we're going to start out. I have a question here from June. If you got to make a game that exists in the world of a James Bond movie but barely touches the actual plot, which movie would you choose?
So a game that takes place in the setting but doesn't really mess with the plot?
Yes, which GoldenEye Rogue Agent doesn't actually take place in the setting during the movie GoldenEye, but, you know, it wants you to think that, so that's sort of the spirit of the question. My answer is really straightforward. I would love to play a fucking, like, this goes back to a podcast we just put out. I would love to play a Casino Royale, like, modern Casino Royale card shark game where you are just a card shark in the casino and just wild shit keeps happening in the background. I'm like, what the fuck is going on over at the table?
Trying to think of... It's hard because, like, well, I guess I've always thought it might be interesting to, like, have a game where you're, like, not playing a supervillain or something, but just, like, a henchman in, like, their volcano lair or shit like that, where you're just stuck doing things like cleaning the fire trap they use when one of their subordinates displeases them or something, or you're going around and feeding the sharks before they're before the cage is opened and they're set off on the heroes and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Something that combines, like, the... just looks at the mundane reality of making the, these larger-than-life, very campy scenarios possible.
I mean, the volcano lair, I feel like, is biggest in You Only Live Twice, so maybe that's the one for you.
Yeah.
It's, there's a specific minigame where you have to stop your boss from allowing James Bond to smoke. For anyone who isn't poisoned with Bond brain, which even I only have like regional poisoning, there's so many I haven't seen, but at the peak of that movie, Bond gets captured by the big bad and he's being, you know, held hostage, and he's in the control room and like, this is our computer that controls everything, it'd be super bad if it breaks. And Bond gives the most like, I'm up to some shit look, and then goes, can I smoke? Because he's got trick cigarettes that shoot bullets. It's so dumb.
Yeah. Maybe a WarioWare style minigame situation where, like, are you familiar with the scene in GoldenEye with the pen?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, yeah, just a bit where you have to count the number of times that Bond has clicked the pen to be like, okay, is it safe? Is it not safe? Oh, no.
Actually, yeah, like, a WarioWare Bond would be pretty fun. There are a bunch of, like, dumb little scenes you could turn into stuff, right? Like,
yeah.
Even just in GoldenEye, it's like, okay, pull all the motherboards out of your server before you're hacked by Natasha. Yeah, good stuff. Our next question comes in from Marin. Have you seen... You've seen the tweet I put out promoting this.
Yes.
So this is from a secret part of the Hong Kong level. You can walk through a couple of walls, and there's a room with a cow on like a inflatable boat, and that's the room where the golden gun is, and you can get the golden gun. The question, did you shoot that cow?
I didn't know that room existed until you tweeted about it, so no, I did not shoot the cow.
Well, I did know the room existed, and I went in that room. Like, that screenshot is from me playing the game. And I picked up the gun, and I pointed at that cow, and I didn't shoot that cow. First of all, I would have been able to. The cow has no collision. You could walk right through it, so the bullet would have passed straight through it. But also, I respect cows.
Hell yeah. I'm
not going to shoot a cow. Cows are all right. All right, third question coming in from Kyrie. Similar to our first one, but a different spin on it, which Bond movie or subseries would you want a rogue agent spinoff where the major antagonist is James Bond? So this one is not, you're not in the sidelines, you're not doing the minutia, you're not counting the pen clicks, you are the full-on, you know, Trevelyan, or, you know, or Mr. Hunter / GoldenEye, as if you prefer.
Who would be the most... Basically, who would be the most fun villain to play?
Or just what would be the most fun, like, plot and context in which to be the henchman? I might say Moonraker.
Yeah, the moon stuff, and that's pretty cool. It's hard to think about that, but, like, it... Well, I know the one that I wouldn't want to be. I would not want to be the one in Casino Royale, because his whole thing is just, like, not being the person who's really in charge and just gets fucking shot in the head.
What if you were Richter Renard Zokas from The World Is Not Enough, and so you didn't feel pain?
Or I could be like, what's the one with, like, the news organization? You know, the one I'm talking about?
I don't know if I've seen this one. Okay. It doesn't ring any bell for me.
Okay. There's basically, I think it's Tomorrow Never Dies. That sounds right. There's one where the villain is basically someone who owns, like, a decent portion of the news. Yeah. And it's like, okay, yeah, if I was in that position, I could maybe get some shit changed.
So you want to play a game where what you're doing is putting out fake news stories to get Bond killed? That sounds sick.
Yeah, basically.
yeah, that is Tomorrow Never Dies. I haven't seen that one. I've only seen parts of The World Is Not Enough. I saw the part where I saw the attempted sex scene because it's such a stupid scene. And then I saw what I think was Bond and the villain in a nuclear submarine beating each other with rods of uranium. I was like, what are we doing? Oh, no, sorry, plutonium. They're hitting each other with rods of plutonium. Yep, that is actually what happens in that movie. That's so stupid.
You know, this isn't... James Bond is not a series known for its subtlety. I'll say that.
Very fair. Last question from Emrys. Similar angle. I think Rogue Agent draws out a lot of villain thoughts from people, and by which I mean thoughts about villains, not villainous thoughts. Which Bond villains would be the best and worst to work for?
Well, I guess I need a moment to think about that too.
That's fine. I feel like the dude in Skyfall seemed like he treated his dudes pretty well. He'd be all right.
Yeah.
Slightly unhinged, but he's a Bond villain. What are you going to do?
I guess my favorite would be something that's just closer to the fact that I have a crush on this actor.
Yes. Give us the goods, Jen.
I'd be interested in being in A View to a Kill just because it would mean that I would be working alongside Grace Jones.
All right. Shoutouts. Yeah. I haven't seen that one, but Grace Jones is cool.
Yeah, Grace Jones is so fucking cool.
Let me see if I can come up with another answer besides the Skyfall guy. I mean, honestly, I feel like Dr. No seems like the kind of, like, dude who has his shit so together that he would probably be pretty great to work for, right? Like, he'd be a real pain in the ass about, like, the time you punch in and punch out, that kind of thing. But also, you know he's got his benefits in order. Yeah. You know, you're like, hey, does this job have dental? And he's like, are you mocking me? Of course it has fucking dental.
I think to some degree, the Bond universe knows that in order to, like, maintain loyalty, first you do have to have that kind of fear element, but also, because no one can really know this thing exists, you just have to give them the best fucking life imaginable. So, especially all the various Bond movies where the climax is them going to a specific secret island or underground base or whatever, where it's like, oh, I've created an entire society below here. And it's like, okay, I imagine a situation where it's like, well, I can't say hi to my family, but I do have a pretty nice life here.
I will say you have to be a henchman, because I'm looking at Dr. No's stuff, and there are a lot of people lower down the totem pole who he treats like shit, apparently. But, yeah, they're paid good wages and give decent accommodations. Yeah, as long as you're actually a henchman. Doesn't help to be three steps down the fucking, you know, like, infrastructure from any Bond villain, I think.
Yeah. You gotta be just high enough so that you're given a comfortable life, but just low enough that you don't become a main target for Bond, or don't have to worry too much about being in the building when it explodes.
You know, I feel like Boris had it pretty good in GoldenEye.
Yeah, he had an alright time there.
You don't want to, like, it's tricky to say Aurmov, because there's a decent, decent chance you end up as fucking, like, oh, you are in the Soviet Army, and I don't want to be be in the Soviet army. But if I get to be a programmer or something, okay, we can work with that.
Hacker flipping around pens, hiding codes behind dirty passwords and shit.
I need to watch more Bond movies.
They can be really fun. Like, of course, it's some of them are over 6 or 7 decades now, so some of them have lots of issues, but they can be a whole lot of fun.
Well, with that said, I think thank you everyone for joining us for our second episode here of Honor Her Majesty's Secret Playlist. Hope you had fun. But if you did, you should feel guilty because these are the stories, these are the chronicles of a man and his secret operations where he went through a lot of pain and suffering and a lot of people died. It's not a joking matter. We're not here to have fun. We're here to report history.
we're here to declassify the classified through Indeed. Video games.
And so we'll see you next time with Everything or Nothing and perhaps a special guest. By say perhaps, I mean I know we're going to have a special guest, but we're going to announce it closer to the recording for, you know, hype reasons.
Yeah, going to be a fun surprise for y'all.
Do we have a sign-off for this? I bet we don't.
Yeah, I don't think we have a sign-off. Let's see. Until the next mission?
It's not really... It's podcasts are forever. From Podcast with Love. Podfinger. Podfinger, that's it. Bye.
Bye. Podball.